looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Frank, when you said that, we decided to grill you and ask you the last 2 years, who you think the top five best hitters are. So let's have a little fun.
And it's the last 2 years. It's still debatable. There's some guys on the outside looking in. I could easily, 2 more months could be in my top five. But right now, it's J.D. Martinez, 1. Aaron Judge, 2. Mike Trout, 3. Mm. Jose Altuve, 4. And Charlie Blackmon, X Factor, 5.
Oh, what was your criteria here?
Just overall hitting. Average. Home runs. Runs scored. These guys are offensive powerhouses. It's an incredible time to watch hitting in baseball. But these guys on that list have done a lot of damage, and J.D. Martinez is number one, has been under the radar. So we're talking about this guy tonight. Talk about J.D. Martinez.
Agreed.
So again, that's a comment we played for you here earlier in the week on the Baseball Reporters. I thought it was worth playing again because I do want to get further into the J.D. Martinez discussion. And when I say the discussion, J.D. Martinez here in the early part of this season has been otherworldly with the Red Sox. Really, off the charts good. J.D. Martinez has been a big reason why the Red Sox have started the year the way they have, and in tandem with Mookie Betts, has provided one of the best 1-2 punches in the game. In fact, I was looking at some sabermetric analytics the other day, Murray. Do you know who the top two hitters in baseball are regarded as this season?
Martinez and Trout?
No. Mookie and J.D. Martinez. Oh, okay. So by many metrics, the Red Sox have had the two best hitters in baseball here in the early part of the season. One's a guy that they drafted and developed in their system. The other one is a guy they brought in as a free agent. And so, you know, my question to Red Sox fans tonight concerns J.D. Martinez and whether or not you think it's a legitimate long-term thing. Okay, and when I say that, I would like to juxtapose him, Murray, or contrast him with David Price. They signed David Price to a big contract. They brought Price here. Many people at the time said it's going to be a disaster. I wasn't against the Price signing. But Price got here, and then we learn as time has gone on, Price can't handle the market. Price is sensitive to Twitter, sensitive to, you know, he's obsessed with Twitter, sensitive to criticism. The whole thing is feels like a bad marriage from the very beginning. I never heard any of that with Martinez. Like, it never popped up. Do you remember any of it, or am I just ignoring
it? No, and there would have been a time for it, too, at least in spring training, where he really couldn't even hit a meatball down the middle of the plate, and even the first couple of weeks seemed a little bit shaky, and you never heard a peep out of the guy.
So, you know, and there's never been anything in his history to suggest that he can't handle some level of criticism, or so I don't know, I find that interesting that the questions we typically ask when the Red Sox sign a high-profile free agent, one of the questions we ask is, can this guy come to Boston and handle the intensity of the market? So Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal wrote this column today, and I think it included some interesting comments from J.D. Martinez. I want to read you some of those. I also want to read you some comments that Martinez made after Frank Thomas said what he said over the weekend. In the comments we played for you again, Frank Thomas believes J.D. Martinez has been the best hitter in baseball since the start of 2017. And the numbers basically bear that out, that when you talk about OPS and productivity, and I mean run production now, RBIs, runs scored, there are only two guys in the game that you can really include right now. One is Mike Trout, the other is J.D. Martinez. And so Martinez has been an absolute force since the beginning of last year. So he was asked about the Frank Thomas comments over the weekend, and he said, quote, "My whole career, even in the off season, everyone is kind of like, who is this guy asking for all this money? Nobody knows who this guy is. I've always been living in the shadows of Miggy, meaning Miguel Cabrera, and all these guys in Detroit. It's cool to get some recognition for it. Me and Paul Goldschmidt, the first baseman in Arizona, used to laugh about it because whenever somebody would do something good, MLB would blow it up. They would put it on their Instagram, put it on Twitter, put it on the MLB Network. ESPN would talk about it. Me and Goldie would be like, didn't you do that 2 days ago and nobody said anything? We would just laugh about it. Goldie would hit three home runs a game and it would be like, oh, Goldie hit three home runs. But one of the other guys, it would be monumental. That's kind of the way it's always been. And then he goes on. To me, baseball has their guys, and they're going to advertise them. If you're not one of those, you better walk on water. That's what we always laughed about, saying, bro, you have to walk on water to make that show. It's cool to at least get some recognition. So let me ask you before I get to the McAdams story, do you think he's resentful of the attention other guys get? And do you think he covets it? Or how do you read those comments?
I think he's using it as a motivational factor, the way that it reads. At least that's how it sounds to me. I think that there's a little bit of resentment, and maybe he'd like to be a household name, but the only way he can do that is continue to rake, which he's done here for three seasons. So, you know, look, it's... If that's how it's working out for him and he's using it as a fire in his belly, more power to him. It doesn't sound like he's like extremely pissed off about it because a few times there you're mentioning how him and Paul Goldschmidt would have a laugh about it.
Okay, so there is a wham, wham, wham. You know, how come I don't get the same love all the superstars get, right? And at the same time, I wonder if there's an actual benefit there to Martinez for the reasons you're saying.
I think for some guys it can be.
So if he's butthurt about the fact that other players in Major League Baseball get the love that he does not, that Mike Trout as a first-round pick as a superstar, Miguel Cabrera as a 19-year-old, I think, was in the big leagues playing for the Marlins and then was acquired by Dave Dombrowski and was a superstar from the get-go. Like that certain guys get love and adulation from the very beginning as high picks, high-profile free agents. If on some level J.D. Martinez is butthurt about that, good. Good, because I think it's part of the reason he is the player he is, which brings me to the McAdams story. Okay, so Martinez talked to McAdam about his whole experience and his whole time as a major leaguer, and just listen to what this guy rattles off. Okay, first of all, he says, I remember seeing and hearing on TV that Boston is a big market, Martinez said, that there's a lot of noise. Boston's this and that. Can you handle that? But I was like, dude, I handled getting released. I've been to the bottom, and I think it built my mental toughness to not worry about what fans say. Okay? And so he was released by the Astros in 2014. But listen to how he talks about his own story. In high school, when I didn't have any D1 offers, he says, we won two state championships, and I remember sitting on the bus wondering, am I ever going to play baseball again? I remember going and trying out for all these D2 schools and barely getting an offer. Then the draft, everyone's telling me I'm going to go in the top 10, and I don't go until the 20th round. Then they send me to rookie ball, and I'm the sixth outfielder. I'm not even playing. Two guys have to get injured for me to get a chance. To me, my story, I wouldn't trade my story for anybody's. I love my story. It could have been easy for me. You look around, and for the most part, a lot of the best players, it's been silver spoon. You have all the hype coming in. Everyone talks about how great you are. You cruise your way through the minors. You can hit 270 and you're still getting promoted. Me, I always had to show up. You know, and then he starts talking about his father and all this other stuff. And I'm wondering if the fact that maybe the idea that J.D. Martinez isn't some sort of spoiled brat bonus baby draft pick, it's part of the reason this never came up on our radar as far as his ability to handle Boston. Now, I want to read you another part of the story where he talks about getting heckled in left field, probably for his defense at Fenway Park, which I don't know if I necessarily believe, but I do think the guy has had to endure some things in the early part of his career that has made him sort of tune out all the noise, focus on the baseball, and become a better player. And I wonder if a guy like David Price, taken first overall in the draft, who spent less than a year in the minors. Price started in the minor leagues in 2008. By the end of the season, he was pitching for the Rays in the playoffs. Like, you look at that sort of development curve, and you can't help but wonder if maybe the Red Sox now need to factor this in when they start bringing guys here to play. Look at where he came from. Look at what he had to endure. Look and see if there was some sort of fire in his belly before you give him this enormous contract. Did he earn it because he worked for it? Or did he earn it because he just had a horseshoe stuck up his butt and he won the genetic lottery?
Yeah, I think it's definitely that. I don't know how you can think otherwise. I mean, the juxtaposition between Price's story and J.D. Martinez, and it is a great column because a lot of that I certainly didn't know. I don't know how many people did. You know, there's a level of humility that you hear coming out of J.D. Martinez in those quotes in the story. And he's already dealt with hell, you know, having cut, you know, wondering if he's ever going to make it to the majors again, riding the buses, coming up the hard way, not drafted first overall like David Price, being this, you know, special guy coming out of Vanderbilt, being fast-tracked right into the majors essentially after being in the minor leagues for a short time. So, you know, he's of course, having dealt with that kind of stuff, it's going to be easier for him to deal with, you know, any of the media nonsense or fans getting on him or anything like that. That's nothing. He's tasted real hell. Whereas the guy like David Price, he's never dealt with any kind of real adversity. And I think you can even make the case for Andrew Benintendi, who I mostly like as a player. But, you know, it's not like he saw any time in AAA. Came right up from AA. You heard that he was kind of a cocky a-hole down there. Thinks that he might be walking on water. He comes up, you know, seems like he's lax at times. Lacks focus in, defensively, or at least on the base path. So, you know, you look at some of these guys that they have so much talent, but have they really had to, I don't know, have they been humbled at any point? And probably not.
So they don't know
how to deal with it.
I'm glad you brought up Benintendi, because Benintendi, Bogarts, and Betts are all thrown into the same pile, right? Like, those are the guys, as well as Bradley. But really, the bigger, the more talented three players are Benintendi, Bogarts, and Betts. Benintendi was the number 7 overall pick. Bogarts was a highly regarded international free agent from the time they brought him into the system. I mean, this is a guy they were grooming. Betts was a fifth rounder. Fifth rounder. I'll double check that, but I'm almost certain it was in the fifth round. Who was probably told he was too small to be a power hitter, couldn't play in the big leagues, and has ripped his way through the minor leagues. And so, I don't know. Now, look, it can go the other way, too. Manny Ramirez was a phenom from the time he grabbed a baseball bat. David Ortiz got released by the Twins. You know, he had issues with Tom Kelly in Minnesota. He had a chip in his shoulder by the time he got here. So I'm not saying that one way's absolute.
No, look at Bryce Harper. It's obviously worked out well for him.
But at sometimes you look at Harper and you say, there should be more there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
J.D. Drew, there should be more there. He was another one that was picked number 1 overall. So I don't know whether the Red Sox have – maybe there's a lesson to be learned from the J.D. Martinez story. I see a number you lined up already. Don't go anywhere, because when we come back, I want to get into this discussion with you. 617-779-0985. A couple of other things happened in that game last night worth noting. Mookie Betts, the late innings, and as always, the absurdities of Tropicana Field. We'll do all that when we come back.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything. Baseball, the Baseball Reporters, 98.5,
the Sports Hub. Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, again, just an interesting story. Sean McAdam, BostonSportsJournal.com, Greg Bedard's venture. J.D. Martinez released, right? Released by the Houston Astros a few years ago, and all of a sudden turns into one of the best hitters in the game. Now, look, in this day and age, I mean, who the hell knows what's going on? Okay, but at the same time, I do think there was a lesson there. David Price, number 1 overall pick, can't handle criticism. J.D. Martinez gets released, turns into a better player. Mookie Betts, fifth-round draft pick, small. Pedro Martinez was small, told he could never be an effective starter in the major leagues. Now, look, for every one of those guys, there's a first-rounder who was motivated and became a great player. But it does make you wonder if on the free agent market, maybe there's an element there that you look at a guy like J.D. Martinez and say, maybe he's the kind of guy worth giving money to because he had to fight to get it. Whereas a guy like Hanley Ramirez hits 13 homers in a final year with the Dodgers, and just because of his raw ability, the Red Sox give him $88 million. Hanley can hit, the ability's there, but does he have the same sort of drive that is going to allow him to endure adversity and ultimately become the best player he can be? Because I would tell you that Hanley, for his ability, has underachieved. And it feels like David Price has underachieved for his ability, certainly in the postseason. So, again, maybe there's an element here for the Red Sox to look at more closely when they pursue players on the free agent market. Jimmy is in Boston. Jimmy, go.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So what I'm thinking here is that, you know, J.D. Martinez plays in the shadow of, you know, Miggy and V-Mart. Middle market team, gets traded to Arizona. Small market team, nobody watches. So he's thinking to himself, if I want to be the next big guy, I got to go to a team that people watch. There's four teams, right? The Cubs, Nationals, Yankees, and Sox. And he's looking at Mookie Betts and Hanley and a couple of these guys last year. That probably played to our benefit because they underperformed so badly. He's thinking, he's so confident in his abilities that he's going to come here, he's going to be a star, and he's finally going to get the recognition that he deserves.
So, look, Jimmy, I think that's part of it. I think he was also frustrated by the fact that he didn't get more money right out of the gate. And so, look, that this was an issue, right? J.D. Martinez didn't sign until the very end of the offseason. In fact, I think spring training had already started by the time they actually agreed to the deal. And so even think of that. He finally has a monster year. He goes out and hits 29 home runs after the All-Star break. And I know he only hit 16 before, but he also missed time. So the slugging percentage that he had in the first half last year was really high. So even though he had a good year, he still didn't get his money. And someone like me looked at him and says, well, I'm not sold on this guy. I think this is going to be a mistake. And as it turns out, maybe that's a plus, not a minus. Like the fact that he's motivated and there are people who doubt him. Maybe that turns out to be a positive, not a negative, because of who Martinez is, where he was drafted, the fact that he was released. Like, all of these things add up. And ultimately, you say, here's a motivated guy. Here's a guy that is intent on disproving people who have doubted him over the course of his career, including the Red Sox, by the way. Right? So I just wonder if maybe there's a lesson in there that we don't look at enough when it comes time to signing these players. Tom's in Foxborough. Tom, go.
Hi, how's it going? So just a couple points I want to make. I genuinely think this is a guy who just eats, sleeps, and breathes baseball. I mean, you hear the stories about him recording his batting practice swings to try and replicate the best ones. And my second point is I think him and Mookie are really just developing a relationship over this love of baseball, and that's something that excites me as a fan just in the years to come, is just two guys who are motivated to work hard and make the team better, and I'd love to hear you guys comment on that.
Okay, so Tom, are you still there?
Yep.
Okay, but before you go, the fact that J.D. Martinez became obsessive about his hitting and everything else, what do you think caused that? Like,
I
you say,
I think it has something to do with, like, how he came up, the fact that he's had to earn everything he had. So if it's a lesson the Red Sox actually learned and looked into that, I hope it's a lesson they repeat.
Okay, so again, you talk about the work ethic, and I'm just telling you that some of the great players never really have to work. The game just comes easily for them. It's a gift. David Price, with all due respect, David Price is 6'6". He threw 97 miles an hour, 98 miles an hour from, who knows, the time he was 16 years old, maybe younger. Like, I have no idea. But he was the number one pick in the draft. He was highly regarded. The game was always a piece of cake for him. So what happens when he gets into the late innings or he gets into October and all of a sudden everybody is supremely motivated and you're going against the best of the best coming off a good season? He cracks because he doesn't really know how to fight. He doesn't know how to compete. Like, I used to feel this way about LeBron James early in his career. And I don't know. I just wonder if maybe I missed it on J.D. Martinez. And for that matter, Mookie Betts, fifth-round pick, small guy. Again, Dustin Pedroia is another good one. You look, what do you think people were saying about Dustin Pedroia when the Red Sox drafted him? What do you think they were saying about him in Arizona when he was playing in college? Arizona State, same stuff. too small, can't do it. And so what happens? You get guys that max out, that hit their ceiling because their intent, there's a chip there. They are a chip on their shoulder, their intent on disproving all the a-holes who think they can't do it. I wonder if there is a lesson there. Ralph's in Cranston. Go, Ralph.
Hey, guys, you know, it's still too early with J.D. We love him so far, and I like his story. You can't compare him to Price or anything else at the contract yet. But, you know, the Red Sox have a lot of great players, but they're not a very smart organization. They waste more money. You could feed a small country with the money they throw away. But, you know, they got lucky. I mean, Tony, what if Bradley right now, we saw early on, J.D. Martinez came out and said, look, I didn't come here just to DH. I like to play the field. I'm a pretty good fielder. What if Bradley right now was hitting, let's say, 290 with 11 home runs, and it was a much better outfielder than J.D. Martinez? You might see a sulking guy. So in a way, they kind of got lucky because he's playing the outfield. He wants to play it. He's happy. He's hitting the hell out of the ball. But what if they were telling him, you know what? We got three great outfielders. Like, it's quite evident they didn't tell him you were going to be just the DH. I think they got lucky with Bradley not hitting well so they can sit him down and keep J.D. happy.
Okay, so Ralph, look, it feels to me, though, like they had made the decision to play J.D. Martinez even before that, in spite of the criticism that people like me gave them and said, you know, this guy should be DHing. He's a butcher in the outfield. So if you want to say they got lucky, maybe they got lucky that at the end no one offered him more money, but I think they had planned to play him in the outfield before Bradley went bad. Okay, so I don't think that they stumbled into that one. I think they said, no, we're going to try to keep this guy happy because he can hit. And if he's intent on proving people wrong, fine. Like, I don't hold that one against him. There may have been some luck in them landing on J.D. Martinez late in the year because no one else signed him. And it certainly didn't sound like anyone was willing to throw a pile of money at the guy, at least fully guaranteed. And by that, I mean no opt-outs, no anything else. So... But I think the story really is indisputable. There are certain guys that you look at and say, well, that guy had to fight for it. And I think J.D. Martinez is one of those guys. And I'm glad you brought up the defense, though, because I do think there is a sensitivity there with J.D. Martinez in the defense. And he made a comment to Sean McAdam in this story on BostonSportsJournal.com that, to me, is a little insincere. I'll tell you exactly that was after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Shot deep to left. Back it goes. Kiss it goodbye. Apparently, Mr. Betts does not like to be tied with anybody in home runs. A three-run bullet, number 16.
So that was obviously the biggest play in the game last night between the Red Sox and the Rays. Mookie Betts breaks the game open with a home run. Red Sox end up winning 4-2. Craig Kimbrel looked like he wanted to give it away in the ninth. He did not. But, you know, I joke all the time about Mookie Betts. I say joke. It's not really a joke. It's, to me, a legitimate sort of observation. I don't want to necessarily call it a criticism. Mookie Betts has pull power. He's not like J.D. Martinez, who can hit the ball out of any ballpark in the big leagues. Mookie Betts has to pull the ball to hit it out. If you pitch him right, you can mitigate what he can do to you. Nonetheless, that home run last night was a little different. He almost got jammed on that ball. And if you go back and watch it, a lot of times when Mookie hits a home run, really those hands are so fast, he can get them through the strike zone. The bat just flies through there. This one, to me, almost looked like he had his hands sort of tucked in by his belly. Like, watch it. I don't know how he hit the ball as far as he did.
I feel like there's been a few of those, though, this year. I mean, with some of those ones, they look like you jammed. If anything, he's going to make contact, maybe break the bat, and it'll just go back to the pitcher or the third baseman. He's raking them.
I mean, he really – I don't know how he hit this ball out the way he did, Murray. And what it speaks to more than anything is his hand-eye. Like, to be able to hit the ball on the barrel of the bat Again, if you watch it, slow it down and look at where his hands are. They almost look like they're like it, the whole thing is tucked in close to him, right? That's God-given hand speed and hand eye. It's just insane. And so he's having an extraordinary year so far. He's an extremely gifted guy. And if he has a chip on his shoulder, which is sort of the theme of the show, then so be it, because it's making him a better player. We'll get back to your calls. And Billy, who's in Lakefield. Billy, what do you got?
How you doing? Hey, Murray, I love you. All good fun. Maz, I just wanted my uncle used to bet on the Red Sox when they first started out. I mean, he used to make a lot of money. And then they go through the season, then when it comes to the end of the play, they seem to die. Is it because they get lazy, or is it because they get tired, or is it because they overpay these guys? What is it, Maz?
Well, so look, I think it depends on the year and the team, Billy. Like, you know, you go back to 04, that team wasn't lazy. That team was motivated. And they were intent on winning in October, and they did. And look, if you ask me before that, I think those Red Sox teams had to carry a very heavy burden and a lot of pressure, and it ate them up late in the year in September and October. Now, I think you've got a lot of guys on this team that don't necessarily feel like they have anything to prove. I call them the millennial Red Sox, but Andrew Benintendi doesn't feel to me like a guy that has really earned anything in the big leagues, but he acts like he has. And I feel that way. Jackie Bradley, I feel that way about. Mookie Betts, I feel that way about to a degree. I'd like to see him play with a little more anger and edge. But this year, it's hard to bitch about Mookie. Adam is in North Reading.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I wanted to talk about the beginning. You touched on Martinez, the comparison between Martinez and Price. And I think it's a good one. It was a very interesting article and segment. But you have Price. First overall pick goes immediately to Tampa, a nothing market where nobody cares about the team. And even in pressure positions, he never once stepped up. The starting pitcher in game 162 in 2011 for the Rays was David Price, and he was down 5 runs by the second inning. He got bailed out in that game by Longoria and Dan Johnson, if you can believe it. And then he has never won a playoff game. The guy is a mental midget. And then you talk about Martinez, that whole story I didn't know, and it's very interesting. He has to keep constantly showing that he's better than he's given credit for, and I think that is driving him, like you mentioned.
And so Adam, I think that's an interesting point, that when the Red Sox were collapsing in 2011 and they blew it in Baltimore in that final night, Tampa came back from like a 7-0 deficit, and it was David Price who put them in that hole?
Yes, it was. Mark Teixeira hit a grand slam in the second inning off David Price, and the Rays were down 5 by the second inning, and Price was on the mound. It's a de facto playoff game, and you still can't win.
Wow. I mean, really, that I tell you what, I did not know that. I didn't remember it, but it does. It speaks volumes. I'm just telling you that sometimes I think you got to watch out for some of those guys. That Price, again, number one overall pick, 6'6", tremendous gifts, can throw 97, 98 miles an hour early in his career. Hell, he might have hit 99, 100. I have no idea. I just remember him throwing bullets.
I mean, look, even Alex Rodriguez, granted, I know he finally got a title.
No, he's another one.
Yeah, in 09, he finally won. But how many times did he come up small in the playoffs?
So he to me, is sort of the LeBron of Major League Baseball. And, you know, LeBron's better and more competitive, I think, than Alex Rodriguez. But when they won in 09, it wasn't about him anymore. It was about Teixeira. And it was about Sabathia, because the Yankees had brought in a whole new crop of players because they couldn't win with Alex Rodriguez as a centerpiece guy. I don't know. I mean, it's just it's an interesting discussion, because sometimes those guys at the top, they really don't. They never really have to fight for it.
They've been given everything that their whole lives have been handled with kid gloves, and everyone bends over backwards for them. So when they face any kind of adversity, they wilt.
So, like, you know, in the case,
not all, but, you know, it's happened. There's more than enough cases that you can point to.
I mean, there are a lot of guys who are number one picks that turn into great players. But, you know, it is, there are just as many sometimes that you look at it and you say, well, that guy didn't have to fight for anything. Dan is in Cranston. Go, Dan.
Hey, how you doing? I don't want to do this, but I had to look it up because Robinson Cano has proved that guys are still trying to cheat. And this guy's from the Dominican. So I just looked up his first 3 years. He had 900 at-bats at Houston. He hit a total of 24 home runs, 6-11-7. Yeah. And then you look at him moving forward, he just, out of nowhere, you know, that sounds a lot, sounds very familiar to somebody else that we know from the Dominican who played for the Twins. It's just, I know baseball's doing a much better job of cracking
so,
down.
So Dan, can I just stop you for 1 second? He's born in Miami. Okay, J.D. Martinez went to high school in the United States. He was drafted. He was not an international free agent. He grew up in America.
Does he spend any time in the Dominican during the offseason?
I have no idea, and honestly, I don't know if his parents are from the Dominican or anything of the like. And listen, I'm offering that purely as a fact, not as any sort of get-out-of-jail-free card, for lack of a better term, because I don't blame you for being skeptical. This is what the steroid era did. It's that you're allowed to be skeptical. I don't think that makes you an a-hole or a naysayer or a rotten human being. So I feel very strongly about this because when Major League Baseball tried to get steroid testing, the Players Association and the union resisted it. And they elected to circle the wagons and prevent testing for a long period of time. And so when that happens, you know what it tells me? That a lot of people are guilty and they had to protect them. So if the union at the time threw innocent people in, and I say innocent, non-users, in with users and penalized the guys who were clean, well, that's their problem. By doing it the way they did it, they led me to believe a certain thing. What am I supposed to be, naive? Like, sorry, can't do it that way. Joe's in West Roxbury.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. Your point comparing Martinez to Dustin Pedroia is so on point. You need talent to get to the league, but talent and the chip on your shoulder is going to be what separates these guys late in games or late in their careers. I saw Dustin Pedroia play. I watched him play at Arizona State in 05 when they went to the College World Series. He was getting pushed for time by Ian Kinsler, another high recruit. There were other highly recruited guys like Travis Buck on the team. Cal played them, and they looked at this small guy, 5'7", and said, oh, we're just going to pitch him and jam him inside. First two pitches, they're brushing him off the plate and laughing. He literally steps out, shakes his head like, I gotcha, steps in, two pitches later, hits a three-run bomb, runs the bases still in like 18 seconds, and demonstratively stomps on home plate without saying a word, and they never, you know, disrespect him again. So here's a guy that, from the college ranks, was over-recruited, guys pushing for his minutes. So when he finally gets drafted by the Sox, gets to the call, plays in 07, he's been pushed by other guys his whole life. He's had a fight to prove himself for size, for talent, for playing time. And that's why all these guys are good enough to make the roster. That's why we call some of these guys gamers, and some of these guys, you know, just kind of shy away, you know,
okay,
shy away from the big moments.
So, Joe, look, we all love Pedroia for that reason, okay? It's hard to look at Pedroia and not appreciate the career he's had, given his size. So just, you know, there aren't many guys that play at the level he's played. Hell, he hit cleanup some years for them. The year he won the MVP, which would have been 08, I remember batting cleanup during stretches of the season. It wasn't a long stretch, but he did a good job while he was doing it. And so, but I don't want to get into the individual stories about let's celebrate this guy, let's celebrate that guy. To me, the interesting thing is there an element in this that we've missed in the past? As much as we look at a guy like David Price and say he can't handle the market, or Giancarlo Stanton in New York, can he handle the market? And Stanton is another guy who is a highly regarded superstar athlete. Now, I think Stanton ended up getting selected in the second round. But the reason is that everyone assumed he was going into college to USC on a football scholarship. Otherwise, he'd have been a high pick in the draft. So when it comes to the Red Sox and the guys they are throwing money at, we all look at the talent. And I'm just wondering if maybe we've been missing an element, and an important one. Again, Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez was spit on. The Dodgers wanted to stick him in the bullpen. And Montreal said, well, we'll give it a shot. We'll put him in the rotation. And he became maybe the greatest pitcher of all time, at least in terms of his ceiling. And I think there were a lot of stories like that of guys who have both of the ability and are motivated. Chris is in a car, has an interesting thing to add to the conversation. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I love all the positivity, too, about JD and obviously with the start that he's gotten off to.
Yeah, I don't. It's not typically what we do, but go ahead.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And that's what I want to brace you for what we should expect, and that would be a major slump. Because when we signed him, what I loved about him was if you look the last 3 years, and I think maybe even four, every year he finishes the year 300, 301, 302. He hits 300. So if we get 300 out of him this year with 40-plus home runs, I think that's a win. And in order to get there, you know, he's at, whatever, 330 now. He's going to be going into a major slump anytime soon. And, you know, he'll still end up finishing the year with nice numbers. So I think that we should be happy with, obviously, what he's given us. And just don't be surprised if he ends up hitting 220 over the next 3 months.
Okay, so, Chris, look, that's the nature of the game. Okay, it's the nature of the game. There's a call on the board right now, Murray, that says J.D. Martinez is similar to Tom Brady. See, I'm not going to take that call because that's where it gets stupid. Okay? J.D. Martinez hasn't won jack squat yet.
Yeah, he's had three good seasons.
But.
2.5.
To the caller's point, everybody goes cold. It's very hard to go through 6 months of baseball and not have a bad month. And even last year, J.D. Martinez hit 232 in the month of August. He then bounced back and hit 396 in September. Okay, but there's going to be a cold spell in there. But overall, you know, 271 in April last year, 309, 291, 396, and then there was a 232 there in August, although he did hit 8 home runs at the time. So, yes, he's going to go cold. I'm just telling you, I think that there is a, you know, there's an element to his story that should be extrapolated and you know, put on more of a macro level with regard to free agency, the kind of guys the Red Sox bring in here, and the profile of player that maybe they should be looking at. Because to me, I'm starting to believe in the story of J.D. Martinez. Even if there's something else going on, I do think that he is a guy that, rightly or wrongly, feels snubbed, and that can help. That can help. I'm not telling you it's why he hits the home runs, but the fact that he works like he does, if this is all true, to me comes from the fact that he had to fight through it and he wasn't just another guy who was the number one pick in the draft. Interesting play last night at that game, in that game in Tampa. In the event you missed it, we'll play it for you next and we'll give you the matchups of the game.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
3-1. High fly ball. That one way up there, and that is going to strike one of the catwalks. And it caroms back into play. That's a fair ball. It's going to wind up a base hit.
Yep.
So Sandy Leon is on.
First one we've seen in a while. That ball clearly hit inside that foul pole that is up on that catwalk and then bounced, and nobody could make a play on it. Leon didn't know what to do. Now it drops down to the ground, and Sandy figures, I'd better run. Everybody looking up there to see exactly where it hit.
Now the rule is if a batted ball strikes either of the upper catwalks in fair territory, the A or the B ring, including any lights or suspended objects, the ball is in play. It's caught by a fielder. The batter's out. Runners may advance at their own risk.
Oh, all the fun of the trap. Catwalks everywhere.
Everywhere.
Foul poles on catwalks. Hey, foul poles hanging. You got all kind of stuff there. It's a lot of junk. Speakers and layers of it.
I think junk is exactly right. The batted ball not judged to be a home run, which remains on any catwalk, is two bases. So that's a double. You see that happen.
Now, if it had hit the next catwalk, it would have been a home run. 3-4 are home runs.
Did you see this stupidity last night in this game? A lot of people didn't.
I didn't, actually. Please
explain. It was in the ninth inning. Sandy Leon hit a ball towards the right field corner that hit one of the catwalks, ricocheted into short center field behind second base, landed. It's a single.
Big single.
If the ball was caught, it's an out. It's like playing wiffle ball in your backyard. Like, yeah, if it hits that tree and falls on this side, it's in play. Okay, well, there you go. It's the same crap at Tropicana Field. I hate that place. One of the worst stadiums in baseball. The worst. Quickly, big matchup of the game is brought to you by Big Y World Class Market. David Price on the mound tonight. Wilson Ramos smashes him. He's not in the lineup. I think he got hurt last night. The rest of the Tampa lineup, or the entirety of the Tampa roster, otherwise 160 with 40 strikeouts against Price. So it feels like he caught a break, and we all know he owns bad teams. Meanwhile, Chris Archer against Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is already the hottest hitter in the game, the best player in the game right now. 353 average with four homers, 1241 OPS. So it feels like it's another good matchup for Mookie tonight in Tampa, in St. Petersburg.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.